Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Thing Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood-Strauss mourning a failed opportunity by Anthony Davis to overtake Kevin Love in the power forward conversation. How's it going?
Oh, I wanted it so bad.
I know you did, and I felt it the entire game, and I just loved that he couldn't do it.
I wanted it so bad. You know, it wasn't about any consideration for the brow. It was more about the angst that you would have to deal with, because I know you hate this stuff where one guy plays another guy and he's the young up-and-comer and he has a better game, and then it's a conversation. Is he the better power forward? You know, is he better than Kevin Love? I wanted you to deal with that. That's what I was rooting for.
Yeah. No, I actually expected that to happen. I expected Anthony Davis to have a big game, outplay Kevin Love, maybe the Pelicans to win, and then just like this really annoying conversation. I always just assume the most annoying outcome possible is going to happen. Not like it's not a defeatist thing like either. It's not the most annoying outcome at times can be the best thing for me personally, but then I have to talk about it. And that's really where I start to like dig my heels in. I just don't want to talk about it.
I was really hoping it would happen, and I was angry when Davis got into some early foul trouble there and on some bogus calls, I would say.
Calls, and he got away with calls that weren't made.
Yeah, well, at the beginning, I can't even remember who he knocked into on one of those stupid verticality things where it's obviously a foul, but verticality, so maybe not. And then
I think
it
might have been Brewer.
Yeah. I think it was where he was jumping sideways, but if your arms are straight up, then the refs sometimes are tricked into thinking that you didn't obviously just jump sideways there. Yeah. So that almost happened. I wanted it. I wanted your stress level to rise and for you to deal with this. And I don't understand why there are all these conversations about the best power forward. The reason why the Pelicans got killed in part is because Anthony Davis isn't their power forward.
Right.
Because they have Ryan Anderson getting bashed apart down low by Pekovic, while Davis is doing powered forward-ish things and running around to guard Kevin Love. So it's so funny. They had a guy for this situation. They had Robin Lopez, and through some sort of accounting trick, the Blazers got him for nothing. I still don't understand how that happened.
Had to get Tyreek Evans.
I know, but what did the Blazers give up?
Yeah, that's not entirely clear.
They gave up, I think, Withy?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Someone in the media section last night said he looked like a mutated version of Brent Berry.
Oh.
Which I thought was weird.
That's fair. That's on point.
A weird thing in the pregame warm-ups when guys are stretching. Not when they come out of the tunnel and stuff, but just their, you know, 75 minutes for a game or whatever the hell the time frame is. And I think the strength and conditioning coach for the Pelicans was challenging Tyreek Evans to get 10 rebounds in the game. He's like, you need to get a double-double tonight. He's like, not assists. Anyone can get assists. Those are easy. I'm like, I don't know. 10 assists in a game is kind of hard.
I just love the idea of him getting fired up before a game and the Pelican. You're a Pelican.
Do you think it bothers?
Flap your wings proudly. Fill your massive bill. Make it swell with pride. You're a Pelican, damn it.
Do you think it, speaking of one-game performances that make people overreact, I'm going to take this the other way and be a hypocrite. Do you think it bothers people that Ricky Rubio completely outplayed Jrue Holiday?
I don't.
Because this is the season Ricky Rubio is supposed to be regressing, which isn't true. But
I don't believe that information would have actually seeped into the consciousness because for whatever reason, people have more fun pointing out that Ricky Rubio isn't as good as you think. That's what this is the season of right now.
Right, it is. It's just, I mean,
I don't get this whole Wolves backlash. I don't understand it, Zach. Maybe you're noticing it, you're not.
I've got theories.
Oh, I want to hear the theories, because to me it's crazy. It's not like anybody thought this team was winning the title, and this is the best team they've had since Kevin Garnett was there, so I don't understand
it's
what the
easy.
Big problem
I
is.
Mean, really, if you look at the talent of the team, like 1 through 10, this is the best team they've ever had. It just in terms of like pure talent, because those Garnett teams were really not good. They had like 4 guys.
Better than the Cassell Sprewell?
Yeah, that team sucked. It's just they had KG, who was arguably the best player in the league that year. And then Cassell and Sprewell were great. Like, they were really good that year. But outside of that, like, they had Trenton Hassell and Irvin Johnson.
Look, I don't want you to speak ill of Trenton Hassell. I quite enjoyed his work.
He could get it cooking. I love Trenton. He, well, get it cooking. He, from 18 feet on the baseline. Like he was essentially like the guard version of Udonis Haslam. Like that's what he was, which was fine. It was enjoyable. But like here's the guy who played, yeah, Hassel played the fourth most minutes that year for the team. Hoiberg played the fifth most. Madsen played the sixth. Then you had Gary Trent, Irvin Johnson, Michael Olowokandi. Like, that was not a good team.
You know who could really get it cooking, though, is Troy Hudson.
Oh, God.
I miss Troy Hudson. I like Troy Hudson.
You're one of two.
I didn't know anything about advanced stats back then.
You and Troy Hudson are the two people that miss Troy Hudson.
Didn't he have sort of a run, though, where people thought he was good just for a brief moment?
Yeah, he had. No. He did. Like, there was a year he averaged, here it is. Yeah, he averaged 14 and 5. And the last year of Terrell Brandon, when I think Brandon was just hurt all the time.
And he was sort of in that era where a select few guys had the Sprewell style hair.
Yes.
Had kind of the dread thing going. God, I sound really white right there.
Well, not the dread thing, but like they put it into pigtails.
Yeah, the pigtails, the cornrows, that kind of deal where it was very subversive in the NBA around that time, so it was really noticeable. And then that made me overrate him.
Sure.
That's all it took.
Wow.
Just like in the NFL, when people have dreads flowing out of the helmet, they just look more athletic and imposing somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But that's why
I always think they look worse than they are.
Really?
In the NFL, they do.
Overrate the Packers defense for years.
See, for me, it makes me think like, oh, this Packer defense could be so much more if they didn't have guys with dreads hanging out the helmet. I think if you could find a way to tuck them into the helmet, to me, the players just look slower.
It just looks less aerodynamic. Is that
yeah? And I feel that way about Joakim Noah with his hair. I think if he had a shaved head, people would regard him as like a top three center. Because I think he would look so much quicker.
I don't want to insult the man, but I'll just put it this way. I'm not saying that I'm talking about Noah, but if you're not the best looking person, it tends to not work out well when you have less hair.
That's a fair point.
You could look a little, you look like an ugly baby.
Okay. All right, maybe okay, so maybe he would look worse, but he would look quicker? Is it better to look, when you're a multimillionaire, is it better to look quicker or is it better to look better?
Depends on what you care about.
And in Noah's case,
he's always cared about the game. Oh, he does also have an active off-court life, too. I don't know.
Active off-court life.
He does.
Yeah,
everybody knows this. He's
always swimming with naked women and...
Yeah, swims with naked women.
There's a cloud of smoke in his pictures.
Loves his Bob Marley, loves brother Bob, you know.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with that. So I think it'd be a toss-up for him, and it just depends. It depends. Maybe, perhaps, if that situation improves over there and he feels like he has more to play for, then he'll take your advice and he'll just go fully shaved head. He'll look like an ESPN.com NBA writer.
What if he went Mohawk? Nobody goes Mohawk, but I think he could do it.
Yeah, no, I think he could do it. That'd be really intimidating. I think that would be a really good idea for him. I want to see Ricky Rubio do that though.
Yeah,
I want to see him go bad boy. That's what he needs to do. He needs to win the people back with a new image because everybody's criticizing him right now for looking like some sort of Disney band member.
Sure, I think you know what's been underrated.
What?
the last like week or so. Is the haircut of Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah.
Like, say what you want about his game, but that is he has really stepped his hair game to the next level. That's just a good haircut.
It's just a good haircut, and mixed with the beard, it's just rugged. Wrangler.
Yeah.
Wrangler needs to link up with Kevin Love right now. I don't know how
he's the new Brett Favre.
Yeah, and Brett Favre, I don't know if that's the guy you want as your spokesman currently. I don't believe he's playing in the NFL anymore. So it needs to be Kevin Love. The only problem is that you can't really concoct a situation where you're in flannel and playing basketball. That doesn't necessarily work, but they could do it, and he would be perfect for it.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of guys in jeans on a pickup court.
You don't, but he could do it. He could be that guy. You know, he's got the rep. He's got the resume. He's from the Portland area, right?
Well, maybe when he goes to LA, he can make that happen.
whoa, you're just doing it to yourself now.
No, no, this is, you wanted to circle back to what we were supposed to talk about.
Yes. Yeah, I want your theories.
Yeah, you want theories.
Why this huge backlash for a team that nobody thought was going to be great in the first place? And I'm just media all over Twitter. It's the Wolves. You know, they're not that good and yada, yada, yada. What's up with that? What are the theories?
Well, the first thing is Kevin Love, is the fact that he is the poster boy for, if he was on your team, you wouldn't say what you do about him.
Yes,
he is, and there are a lot of guys like that. But he is the guy for that. The whole, like, it's always the empty stats argument, which is just stupid because almost every star puts up empty stats until they get a good team around them and they start winning. Because
LaMarcus Aldridge,
right? Because most of these guys join terrible teams when they start out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have your Derrick Rose, and you have Carmelo Anthony got kind of lucky early on to go to it. He was on he joined a horrible team, but they instantly, in that offseason, turned it into a good team. So he went to the playoffs right away. Derrick Rose went to the playoffs right away. So, you know, you have certain situations where you get good, but, I mean, LeBron didn't make the playoffs in, what, his first 2 years, maybe 3 years? And people started instantly saying, well, what does it matter if he does this? I'm not saying Kevin Love's going to be LeBron, but, I mean, we had that conversation about LeBron, which was stupid. And so it's this thing of, like, oh, it's the empty stats. It's like, it's just an empty team. That's the problem. And now they're a good team with talent, and so now they shouldn't make the playoffs.
Well, I think it's also, there is a legitimate concern about big men who aren't defense-oriented big men. At the same time, he's not exactly surrounded by the ideal roster to capitalize on his talents. Now, yeah, they do have something that's working in this Bruce Brothers, as you quoted Flip Saunders saying, with Pekovic and Love bashing people. But it's not optimal. Optimal would be teaming Kevin Love with somebody like, we mentioned Robin Lopez before. Somebody like that, somebody who protects the rim, and so he doesn't have any responsibility like that. And then in such a situation, I doubt people would be saying that he's overrated at all. They'd just be really enamored by his ability to space the floor and grab incredible amounts of rebounds. So I think some of it is that he's not in a great situation for his talents.
I actually disagree with that.
I know you do.
I think I think Pekovic is a fantastic compliment to him, because
but other teams are shooting like 1,000,000% at the rim.
That's because they make a decision not to foul, which is weird.
Hmm.
They really do just make a decision not to foul, and they haven't done it to, like, sometimes it's just bad defense, but there are times where they just kind of let the guy go and they don't really resist all that much. Peck doesn't really do that, but, you know, he's so slow that if he doesn't get into position right away, he doesn't have a chance to really get there. And so it's become this game where they need a balance of, okay, we're not going to foul, but you've at least got to put up some resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't found that yet. But for the most part, I don't know, the defense is usually good. I mean, they're very much we got to create turnovers kind of team. Like, they're not into getting stops. They're into just taking the ball from you, and that's why it would surprise people, but I think they're 12th in the league in defense right now.
Yeah, their defense hasn't been bad in output. At the same time, I believe, well, last I checked, they were giving up the best percentage at the rim. So it's confusing.
Right.
They do the thing badly that you're supposed to do well if you have a good defense, and they don't. And so they just in other ways they compensate with defensive rebounding, with forcing turnovers, with not fouling, and that all combines for them to have an adequate defense. It's about optimal. It's about good versus optimal. It doesn't seem to be the optimal fit for Love, but it's an okay fit. It's a good fit.
Well,
so,
here's where my counter would be, is that that starting lineup is still really good.
True, true.
And it's when you bring the bench in, which has been terrible, that the problems surface. So mm-hmm. I think that the question is the bench playing below their capabilities? Is the bench just generally terrible, or is Kevin Love, you know, or do the Wolves actually have the right core around Kevin Love, but they have to find a way to maximize, you know, who goes to their bench?
Well, the bench is generally terrible. It's a really bad bench. It's just, I don't know.
It's, all, well, it's also missing two key players, which people will say, oh, you're overrating Chase Bunger and Roni Turioff, but that team was designed for those guys to be, you know, the sixth and the eighth man off the bench. You know what's
funny? When I quit high school basketball, the guy who replaced me actually had to guard Chase in a game, and so that's my one connection to him. And he spoke of it as he was haunted. He was haunted by the experience.
Chase was a player.
Yeah,
he was like a high school phenom.
Yeah, I still just remember him telling me this story. It was on a New Year's. Oh, a little callback there. It was at a New Year's Eve party.
What do you mean callback?
A callback to the times, to the seasons. Okay. Yeah. Don't be a hater. Come on, this is going so well. We were agreeing at least on 15% of things. It was going really well.
Sure. I don't know. You said don't be a hater, though. I don't understand. I didn't hate that point. I just didn't understand it.
It's early in the morning. At this point in the morning, I conflate confusion with hating.
Okay.
maybe at 8 o'clock. No, maybe I'll understand. I'll be able to parse those two concepts. Right. Currently, yeah, no,
7 a.m. 7 a.m. for you. That's fair.
Yeah, it's still dark outside. Yeah. But he was just so haunted by the experience. He just said, first possession. Dunk, second possession, reverse jam, alley-oop, third, turnaround three-pointer, fourth, and he just keeps listing it. And this is a guy where I played point guard, and he replaced me, and he's around my size. I'm 5'11". I think he was around 6'2". He had to guard old Chase there. This isn't relevant at all to how good the Wolves are going to be. I just thought that was a funny connection. I've always been a fan of Chase's game because of that, because, you know, I bring everything back to me, and I'm very narcissistic.
You know what the nice thing about that story was? It wasn't long. Interesting, but it took 2 minutes up.
Yes. There was no... I was actually thinking of what could I lie about right now. As I was going down this rabbit hole of a bad story, I was thinking, what could I lie about to be the surprise? To be the denouement? And then Chase, for some reason, just pantsed him in front of everybody.
It turns out Chase slept with his mother.
That's what a competitor chases. You know, he not only does he do that to you, but he humiliates you in your life. And so that bodes well for the Wolves this season. Here's my theory, though, on the Wolves, because you talked about theories and why this is happening. I believe that as a collective, as a media collective, sometimes we do what's in our best interest as far as entertainment value goes.
Okay.
We're all subconsciously creating the narrative to push Kevin Love out of Minnesota.
That was my next point.
Yeah, I knew you were going there.
That was my next point, is that there is this, it's part of the, if he was on your team, you wouldn't say this. Well, everyone wants to, not everyone, but there are a lot of fan bases that are in the market for that guy. Who would love to be able to say, well, he learned to win with us. And that's really the thing. Is like, it's a narcissist, much like your Chase Bunger story.
Yes.
It's a narcissistic experience where you can say, look, my team fixed him. And it gives you like this sense of that you helped accomplish something because you cheer for the team, you support them, and whatever.
It's the LA thing, too, where the Lakers need somebody, they need a star, and we need to stir things up with the biggest fan base of whom they're going to get, so we need to start talking about how bad it is over there and dark storm clouds because we're trying to kind of push him.
Well, I mean, it's going to be the map. It is going to be kind of a great story when someone drafts Jabari Parker number one, the Lakers get the number two pick, draft Andrew Wiggins, and you've got Kobe at the end of his career teaching Wiggins and Kevin Love how to win, right?
Yes, that is a good story.
That's a great story.
It seems as though they've embraced the tank finally with this these rumors.
I don't think they had a chance. I don't think they had a choice.
I know, but now they at least are accepting reality. I believe that so much of the last year and a half is Laker Nation, from management to the fans, having to swallow the fact that they're just another team in a bad situation, and they're going to have to figure it out.
They have so many injuries, they had to sign Kendall Marshall, who's not an NBA player.
Great Twitter account, though.
Is it, though?
It's athlete great. I mean, that's the
thing. That's the thing. It's like, when it's like, oh, Shaq's so funny. Well, he's funny for an athlete.
Yeah, they can. Oh, those athletes, they can get us to laugh so easily.
I follow actual comedians on Twitter. Those guys are funny.
Yeah.
Like, Hannibal Buress is funny.
I thought that way about the Carmelo Anthony tweet. What was it, the glazed donut face thing that everyone's laughing at? And part of it was laughing at how ridiculous it was, but it was also that it was so funny of him to fire back, and I'm just thinking, this, he just doesn't seem like that smart a person. Just, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Every time I've talked to him, the times I get coffee with him, the couple times I've talked to him, I don't know, I found him to be quite intelligent.
I think it's dangerous to from afar to say somebody's smart or not smart, and it's very vague. It's a very vague definition. I found that with Dwight Howard, where people think he's stupid, but if you ever ask him about NBA defense, he'll sound like a physicist, and you can tell that he's functionally quite intelligent.
It's weird that he would use physicist terms to define defense.
Yeah, there's some crossover.
Is he talking about like Volcrums? Is Volcrum a thing?
He talks about force and mass. Okay. A lot of force and mass.
Force and mass.
Yeah. The theory of relativity gets in there somehow.
Your quote-unquote tanking Lakers have 5 guards that are injured right now. They have seven guards on the roster.
That might be part of the tank, where you start listing injuries. You start honoring injuries that usually you would shrug aside.
Well, they have a guy with a fractured knee. They have a guy with a torn ligament in his elbow. They have a torn hamstring. They have, Steve Nash is just broken. And then Xavier Henry has a strained right knee. So maybe the strained right knee is the tank.
And I have a strained credulity, Zach. I don't believe all of these.
Really?
I don't know if I do or don't.
There's some pretty serious injuries in there.
Gary B, you liar.
What if he's just telling Steve Blake, like, no, your ligament's torn? And he's like, I don't know, my elbow feels good. He's like, nah, trust me.
I love it. The X-ray says you can't do anything.
You'll take one jumper and you'll fall.
They didn't
apart.
Have an X-ray. Yeah. Get out of here.
It's like, how does an X-ray show a torn ligament? It just does.
Why is the MRI a cardboard box?
Cutbacks. It's a luxury tax.
New method. Deal with it.
But yeah, I do think that the a lot of the love stuff is get him out of there. So maybe we have a shot at him, and then it's we taught him how to win, and look how good he is, and his stats aren't empty anymore, and he's actually really good.
I'm just thinking it's some sort of National Geographic thing is happening right now where it's like a pack of wolves are trying to separate the mother from the cub.
The lioness.
Or I'm just saying the pack of wolves. A moose from the young. Is it a calf? Do moose have meese?
I think it's just called calves. A mice. I think it's just the moose and the mice.
Yeah. The youngin, where right now the band of wolves, they're trying to distract. This analogy is terrible because I'm using wolves in the opposite context. You know, it doesn't make sense at all.
Oh, like, a baby moose is a calf.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Good call.
But yeah, a bunch of predators right now are working in concert to try to separate the youngin from the protective mother. And in this case, it's a little different because this band of predators is also saying that, hey, we're not going to eat you. We're going to offer you better weather and more exposure.
Which is fine. I actually, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
If it works, it works. Kevin Love's a great player. I'd be trying to do that too if I was another fan base.
Well, I don't know if signing in LA is the thing to do, though, because frankly, their management might be incompetent.
I still contend that the Heat are the biggest threat.
Really?
Yeah.
What would they do? What would they have to do to get that in order?
Bosch for Love. Wolves would be stupid to pass that up.
Well, rim protection wise. Would they just roll out Chris Anderson and just hope he doesn't age? What would they do there?
I mean, maybe that's where you hope Odin. I mean, I don't know if that's a great plan, but yeah, I think you would become a more traditional team.
I agree with you that that's a threat just because LeBron has always respected Love's game.
Just from things you hear here and there, as you do when you're an insider like me.
Indeed.
The Heat organization is big on him.
Yeah, they like the spacing, and it always has appeared that LeBron's been tampering with Love so softly out there.
Tampering. He talks to him on the court. That's tampering.
I don't understand why tampering's even a bad thing. Everyone got so angry with the Heat and them coming together, and it was collusion. And I just think this isn't real life. This doesn't matter. Why does like, oh my god, they broke the law. The law of basketball.
You're always someone who thinks, like, who wants the league to be as wildly successful as possible because it's beneficial to you,
yeah,
right?
I'm selfish.
What,
yeah.
Wouldn't the most successful thing for the NBA to actually go, like, a pro wrestling route of everything being scripted? Like, fans figuring out what, where the next turn is? Like, that would,
oh,
they would,
dude,
eat
I'm
that
all
up.
About this. I was so angry at the Warriors after
I would
that,
eat that up.
After the Clippers-Warriors game. Where there was this big that was crazy on Christmas. That was insane. Where there were scuffles, there were ejections. Blake Griffin got ejected for no reason,
yeah.
And they keep having these instances between the Warriors and the Clippers. And of course, athletes they're too cool for school, and they always go, "Oh, there's no rivalry. Nobody has a rivalry with anybody." I don't know if you knew that, Zach. There's no rivalry that exists. You need to play each other in the playoffs 1,000 times,
yeah.
And have a totally even record for it to be a rivalry. And I just got so annoyed. I was just at a certain point, and this shows how popular I am in the Warriors locker room, where I was just arguing with the players, and I was just saying, just say it's a rivalry. What's wrong with you? This is what the people want. This is what they love. This is the thing. This is the thing we're entertained by. It doesn't matter if it's true. Who cares? Who
I love
cares
the,
if it's true?
I love the idea of a post Warriors win over the Clippers. And they're feeling good about themselves, and then they let the media into the locker room. They see you walk in, and just everyone slumps. They're just like, "Oh, here we go."
You know what I said? You know what I said to Curry? And
Steph is probably too nice of a guy.
Yes,
but I would imagine there's always a player behind you that you can't see who is just like making those. You gotta set this kid straight. Finally. Steph just like looking. As soon as you break eye contact with Steph, Steph is just like looking at him like, "I know, but I can't."
He's just way too nice a guy to tell me to F off. He's just way too nice a guy. And, well, what I was saying was, it was actually a really interesting moment because Marcus Thompson and I were both kind of on the same side of this, where Marcus was asking if it's a rivalry. Steph kept denying it. And finally, I just said, just say it's a rivalry. Just say it's a rivalry. It's what people are entertained by. And Curry came back with, "Well, why does it matter? Why does it matter?
That's a hell of a question.
If it's a rivalry or not, you know, why is it? Why does that even matter?" And I just said, "Why does anything matter? You guys put a sphere through a ring. It entertains the people. Just accept it. Just say it's a rivalry."
Well, and
we're
whether
we're very entertained by this dumb gossipy stuff.
But
just,
whether the rivalry is there for the team or not, if there's a rivalry for the fans, isn't that all that matters? Because they're the ones that are buying into whatever hype. But if they're creating the hype, isn't that even better for the league? Because the league has to do less, and the fans are doing all the groundwork. Like,
oh, you need the players to goose it a little bit. When Blake Griffin was saying after the game that the Warriors were being cowardly, that's perfect pro wrestling stuff. That's great. And so I thought the Warriors had a responsibility to respond even more bombastically.
Still, the weirdest part of this whole quote unquote no rivalry is the whole Chapel story. Still, I still don't understand that.
Yeah. That's real. I mean, it's a rivalry. They didn't. There was a roadblock thrown up there for them worshiping together.
They wouldn't pray together.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big deal. That's a big deal with those teams.
I guess
although,
it is.
I'm not sure how many people pray on the Clippers. It seems like the Warriors have more people.
Oh, you're calling out the spirituality.
Yeah, I'm calling them secularists. No, I have no idea. I know Chris Paul, he likes religion, yes. I don't know about anybody else.
I don't know if he likes religion. He may believe in God. I don't know if he likes religion.
Matt Barnes, he's pious.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, they're in such a bad spot, the Clippers are. They're a good basketball team, but anytime you feel like you need to combine Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson at the end of his career...
That's exhilarating.
It's silly. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You never know what's going
to
happen.
Steven Jackson will get in a fight, and Matt Barnes will pretend to join. It'll be fun.
It's funny, too, but Steven Jackson's just not good anymore.
Like, oh,
why did they
he's so
feel
bad.
The need to do it? Why did they feel the need to do it?
There was a point where I made this joke on Twitter, but there's some validity to it, that in that, like, that garbage time unit, the best play they run is anticipate where Steven Jackson's going to miss his shot. go for the offensive rebound. I think Willie Green got like a tip dunk or something because he read that miss perfectly. He knew it was going to be such a bad like runner attempt that it just went straight off the backboard right to Willie Green. It was great.
That was my theory on why Detroit, when they were getting a little bit better, why they were doing better, is they were used to where Josh Smith's shots were carrying me off you.
I wonder what the percentage on his misses are rebounded and converted.
Get on it, Synergy. Or yeah. Maybe we can find that regardless. Maybe that's just out there. But you better believe that Andre Drummond's eyes would light up whenever Smith was taking that shot.
Oh, probably the most disappointed he ever is when Josh Smith pump fakes.
Yeah, I believe so, because that's probably he enjoys that. A lot of people would hate when you don't get the shot and when it's taken from you. But in the case of that particular team, their whole approach is essentially offensive rebounding. That's their offense. That's in their playbook, Mochik's playbook. You just open the playbook, it just says offensive rebound.
Yeah, and it just says go get it.
go get it. That's the approach.
So, hey, coach, what play are we running? Go get it.
We're running a Josh Smith throws you an alley-oop off the rim.
Yeah, I think Kurt Goldsberry really screwed the pooch on this one. He shouldn't have done the Kobe assist. He should have just waited 2 years.
Smitty.
And broken out the Smitty assist. The smooth assist.
I agree. You know, he's a great passer both ways. He's a great passer when he's shooting, and he's a great passer when he's passing.
Yeah, it's a rare skill.
Oh, that team. Why didn't they just space the floor around their crazy pick and roll dunking threat? Yeah. It's so frustrating. But
hey, only 3 more years of that combination.
Oh man. Hey, do you want to talk a little little Suns, a little surprise?
Yeah,
surprise
team.
Sure, we're gonna talk. Wait, yeah. No, this is my New Year's resolution, Zach. New Year's resolution, I'm gonna let you handle segues. I'm not gonna butt in with my stupid segues that aren't segues. So
speaking of rising in the league.
Oh.
Can I rant against New Year's resolutions for a little bit?
Do it.
I hate the idea.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me to pick an arbitrary moment on a calendar, because that's really all it is. Your New Year's resolution could start November 3rd.
Yep.
It's whenever you decide, all right, I'm going to get my crap together and stop doing this thing that I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
It's a running joke of like, oh, have your New Year's resolution. 3 weeks in, you're no longer doing it. It's because you don't change who you are. So I was actually inspired by a tweet from Celtics blog in which they said something around...
Look for inspiration in weird places.
I do. they made some joke about how their New Year's resolution was to be more like Rondo, not improve what they're bad at, but to just keep getting better at what they're good at. Mm. And that's what the New Year's resolution should be. I just want to get better at what I'm good at. I don't give a damn about what I'm horrible at. I'm never going to change that about me. I'm 31 years old. I'm about to be 32 this month. I'm never going to fix those problems. Like, if it doesn't happen at this point, then it's just not going to happen. But I can get better at what I'm good at.
I agree. But you just have to accept that holidays are absurd and that this is part of a holiday tradition. And really, when you step back from it and you divorce yourself from the stuff that you're used to, it's insane. It's insane that we all gather together in Times Square and a ball drops.
It's odd. It's odd that the same, like, we're just waiting for a testicle to descend. That's all that is.
The metaphor. That's the metaphor. What it is.
Yeah.
It's a coming of age.
And, it is. It's so weird.
But these holidays, and this gets back to the whole, it's a sphere going through a ring, why is anything anything? But Halloween, that's the craziest of all of them. And we're just used to that. You love Halloween, and is it scary? Wait, is it fun?
Do I love Halloween?
I feel like you're somebody who would. You like events. You dress up for it. Throw stuff up there on the Instagram of you in some costume of some sort.
Do I?
Maybe.
I don't think I do.
Look, I'm projecting this onto you.
I can't remember the last time I dressed up for Halloween. Maybe it happened this year, but I don't. That's not something I ever think of.
I just remember you tweeting. This is the problem when you have friends that you see once a year.
the biggest boost to our friendship is I can go to Sloan this year, because then we see each other twice a year.
It's a great moment. I need to buy the plane ticket. Just that seals it. I'm gonna show up. oh, we can play some basketball this year.
Yeah, love to.
at the old gym there. Yeah. So Halloween, regardless of whether or not you like it, is insane. It's totally insane. So it's supposed to be scary, except kind of not. It's scary, but you can dress as a princess or a,
well, it's,
you know,
it,
or
it's
a
scary because
Ninja
you,
Turtle.
Yeah, it's scary because you never know when you're going to get drugged that night. So that is terrifying.
You could get paintballed by random teenagers. Yeah, it's also teenagers are supposed to run around and wreak havoc, and kids are supposed to go from house to house making a fake threat that doesn't matter, a fake threat chant that then gets them candy. And it has some sort of pagan ritualistic basis that nobody cares about.
Nobody comes to, like, I'm in a very quiet apartment building that has, I think, like, two kids, and no one goes around for Halloween to get candy. So we always just end up with a bag of candy we don't want to eat. Yeah. But I think when I've got, like, a home and kids are coming for Halloween and stuff, like, they're going to say trick or treat, and I'm going to say, what you got? Trick. Let's see what you can do. And if it's good, I'll give you a
best
treat.
Shot.
Yeah, if it's good, I'll give you a treat. I just want to take them up on the other option.
And then one of them pulls out a gun and shoots you.
And I would, you know what? That's a good trick. I didn't see the gun coming.
I didn't see it coming. Yeah. I didn't see it. Sounds like a great sounds like some sort of plot for that Sherlock Holmes show. The new British version.
God, you really love the Sherlock Holmes.
That's what I did on New Year's, man. That's what I basically, a friend came over, and I made pasta from scratch with the pasta maker and pesto. And
why? You, as much as I love to dress up for Halloween, you love to make pasta.
I do. I have a pasta maker. I like making things from scratch.
It's, was this a Christmas gift that you had to, you felt the need to use?
No, I've gotten a few of those, and I'm incorporating them into my life. But the pasta maker, I've had that was a birthday gift that I felt the need to use. And so it's different. But because I'm an old man, and this is my wild New Year's, it was essentially that. And then my friend said, hey, you can go to this party in San Francisco, and all these people are going to be there. And I said yes. And then an hour or two later, when he was about to leave, I said no.
That was there's this hip hop dance party at First Avenue, which is a like a music venue, mm-hmm. A very famous. If you've seen Purple Rain, you've seen First Avenue.
Yes.
And so they had this thing called Get Crifey, which it's this like monthly thing, but they do a big one for New Year's Eve, and it's usually quite fun. But didn't buy tickets in advance, and like that was the plan. Like, oh, we're gonna go to Get Crifey tonight. We're gonna dance, drink, have a lot of fun. And the line to buy tickets was not the line that was under the heat lamps. It was on the other side of the building, and it was like, I don't know, -8, -10, something ridiculous like that. And it was long, and so stood there. Like friends went inside because they had already bought tickets. Stood in that line for about 90 seconds, and then decided, our plans for New Year's are over. We're just going to go somewhere else. That was enough to just completely divorce ourselves of those plans, and ended up going to like just some random bar. It's
just we're older. We're not looking for anything, you know.
I can't wait for the day where I'm asleep at 10:45 on New Year's.
Yeah, and it's just if you're not that's what you find out as you get older is that so much of what you did was just you were single, and then you convinced yourself that this would be a good idea because you were looking for something.
Yeah, I'd love to go somewhere. I'd love to fall asleep on a beach before midnight, before the testicle descends.
You're already just you know how you and Matt were talking about parrot heads and Jimmy Buffett fans.
Yeah.
You're already there.
I still am very uncomfortable with the fact that you listen to the podcast when you're not on.
I enjoy it. It's what I listen to when I take my dog to the park.
I don't like it. Tim Bontemps, who's a friend and a really excellent beat writer, he also listens. I'm uncomfortable by people I know listening because then I can't lie.
Well, again, I do it as a form of just like when I was single, you would just go off to some crazy thing just in case something might happen. That classical conditioning.
You're just waiting for your name.
Just in case you or Matt just mentioned something I said snidely. You know, that's the that's the thing. Because that will happen one out of two episodes. So yeah. You know, that's what it's about. I just want to check up on how I'm being slandered viciously.
You get an an inordinate amount of airtime on this show, whether you're on or not.
It's a mistake by you guys, but awful. I enjoy it.
We got to get new friends.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it quite a bit, but I'm trying not to segue. This is so hard.
We were gonna. Speaking of things descending, the Suns are descending into the lottery. They're ascending.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. Yeah. They're ascending. Do you buy them? Do you buy them as this good as a team that will win over 50 games? As right now they're projecting to do, and they're about to hit an easier part of their schedule. How do you feel about this revolutionary new look slash brother Suns?
First, I just like, I dislike nicknames. You know that.
And this is a nickname based on a nickname.
I dislike the backlash from the other fan bases. Like the Warriors fan base getting almost offended that Dragic and Bledsoe are the Slash Brothers, played off the Splash Brothers, who were played off the Bash Brothers. There's this weird, like, I don't know if it's Beatitudes, but there's a weird, like, the Slash Brothers begot the Splash Brothers begot the Bash Brothers, or in reverse.
I was trying to think to myself, would the Slash Brothers thing have happened had the Splash Brothers thing never happened? I think we can all agree that the Bash Brothers had to come first. But
yes. No, I don't think it does.
That's kind of funny that nicknames can lead to other nicknames of teams. I don't understand exactly.
Is it simply the rhyming that bothers Warriors fans?
Because the Warriors fans are just in this odd place because the team was the darling. And now there are other darlings, and the Warriors aren't that darling anymore.
Isn't that better?
What?
Isn't it better to kind of fly under the radar?
Yeah, but you know how fans like attention. They don't. It's not necessarily about, I just want my team to win. I mean, why would any fan care about power rankings, for instance? Who cares? Who cares about the amount of attention you get? All that matters is the result and what your team eventually does. But people like to bask in it. People like to revel in their team having good things said about them, and people really enjoying their team. And right now, they aren't the darling. The Blazers and the Suns are the darlings.
To kind of bring it back,
that makes
a little...
them sound like Southern women. Darlene. Darlene. They're the darlings.
Isn't there a song? Oh, no, that's Jolene. That's Jolene.
Jolene Embiid, what?
Sorry. There is a satisfaction in the fact that not everyone's against the Wolves. I think most people don't really care about the Wolves. But the fact that the people that do care about them are just like tearing them down right now, because I think they're gonna make the playoffs. Like, just signs indicate that it's a strong possibility. Like and because of that, there will be this weird, like, this kind of sick "I told you so" satisfaction in my heart that I'm gonna try so hard not to let out, because the narcissist in me just wants to, like, be above it all. But inside, I'm just gonna be pointing my finger at every single person on Twitter.
Well, and it also, you can laugh at how ridiculous people get when they get caught up in the schedule and they overreact to schedule and or injuries. What I'm discovering the longer I do this is that the schedule determines a lot of the rhythms of when we get disappointed with teams and when we praise teams.
Yeah, and it's better to get disappointed early.
Yeah, well, definitely. You want your expectations lower, and then you can exceed them. And the Wolves just had this really rough schedule. They're currently, what are they, something like 0-8 in close games? So there's been this run of bad luck that should correct itself going forward. And that combination has led to the early freakout, despite them being pretty good.
Somebody had a excellent point that I was talking to last night, and they said, because they mentioned the 0-8 or 1-8 or whatever it is in these close games, and I think it's 1-8, and they said, you know, I said, isn't that just kind of random? Like, don't you expect that to kind of correct itself? Because Portland was so good in these close games, and maybe they're starting to tail off a little bit in them, and he came back with, I think it's easier. He said I something to the effect of, I think it's much harder to correct that in a positive way than to worry about how it affects you in a negative trend.
Oh,
essentially, like, it's harder to get your stuff together to learn how to win those games throughout a season, as opposed to endure maybe a dry spell after you've had that success. Which I think maybe there's some validity to that.
Yeah, and there's some validity to it. Just it's been such an extreme trend that it won't correct itself enough to really balance the ledger. And all you're going to have as a result of this is that you lost a bunch of close games and have a worse record and maybe missed the playoffs because of it. Even though we expect it, even though we know that it means that the team is better than its record, it might not mean that things are just going to go really well from henceforth, you know? So that's
legit. I don't believe that you wanted to use henceforth there.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not. It's just my back is kind of hurting. I'm in a weird position now.
Oh, yeah, you're hunched over when you're there.
Yeah, okay, I just put a yoga mat under my back. So there's some multitasking that
I like the idea that maybe you're lying down on a hardwood floor just holding the microphone above your head.
It's not far from that. I'm kind of on something that looks like a fainting couch right now. Okay. But it's because I want that sweet, sweet Ethernet, so I need to be positioned in such a way where it's connected to the wall, but I want to be comfortable. Whenever I do the True Hoop TV Lives, because I'm always in just this kind of chair and I'm hunched forward and oh man, I'm not an athlete. I don't know how these guys play seasons. I'm just wrecked from the act of sitting.
Speaking of athletes who maybe should be sitting.
Yes.
It's hard for me to buy into the Suns completely because they've received such a good season from Gerald Green.
I love it. Oh my God. I'm so on board with the Gerald Green renaissance and how what they've done is instead of trying to quell the instinct of the chucker, as I'm sure many a team he's been on has tried to do, hey, stop shooting. They're going, hey, just fire it up from three. Just do your thing, Gerald Green. And right now, he's averaging 9 3-point attempts per 36 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he averages 10.4 attempts a game, and 6.6 of those are threes.
6.6?
That's a lot of threes.
More than Steph Curry. Way more than Steph Curry. He's firing up there from three on a per-minute basis. And it's resulting in the best year of his career, and as far as is it sustainable, I think it kind of is moderately sustainable because they really space the floor, and that's why you're getting great years from all these different guys. And they've got a good mix of speed and athleticism and also spacing out there. Now,
I did see Gerald Green dominate Paul George in a half-court contest after practice once.
There you go.
And that was impressive.
Well, it might show you if this does sustain itself throughout the year, and who knows? It's Gerald Green. It might indicate that, hey, maybe the Pacers just weren't handling their bench correctly. I think sometimes these defensive teams can get so invested in what their mission is that they don't even know how to make use of offensive players the way that Thibodeau was playing Bogans. Was he playing Bogans more than Korver?
Yeah, he was, but no, Gerald Green legitimately sucked. And I don't think you can – I mean, this is a Pacers organization who has developed a lot of talent.
Yes.
I think it's possible that they're just like maybe something clicked finally under Jeff Hornacek's sweet, sultry voice.
God, I love Hornacek.
Oh, he looks like a fantastic coach so far.
Oh, yeah.
But
I don't think
you can criticize any prior team of Gerald Green's for not utilizing him correctly. Like, he legitimately sucked.
Yeah, no, I agree. He did. But I'm just saying that they might have unlocked something with him, which is to just go out there and do a J.R. Smith imitation, and that's the way that you're useful to us. And their guys are just throwing up those threes. Maybe the concern is that they're really relying a lot on Channing Frye to create this dynamic, and do you want to rely on Channing Frye so much?
Oh, see, now that's the guy I believe in.
Ah, okay, okay.
That's the guy on the role players they have that I believe in the most.
He's been doing it for a while. He's just gone through slumps on occasion. Didn't he have that big playoff slump in 2010? Or am I imagining that?
Hold on, this is nothing I knew. I just clicked on his basketball reference page, and it says his nickname is Buffet of Goodness.
What?
That can't be right.
Well, he is a Yelper. He is big on the Yelp. I remember he had his Yelp page, especially when he was on
Portland. Feel like I would have heard about this before today if his nickname was Buffet of Goodness. I'm actually going to screenshot this because I don't really believe that this is going to be there long term.
That's a terrible nickname.
It's an excellent nickname.
No, it's way too long.
Oh my god, if someone called me like the buffet of snark.
Snark buffet.
Or yeah, like the buffet of wit or something. Oh my god, I would love that. Buffet of goodness. My god.
It just should be Diaz nickname.
Okay, that's fair. They need to transfer ownership of that.
It doesn't make sense in a Fry context.
You got a lot of fried foods at a buffet.
Here's my beef with the Suns.
Oh, you're turning on them already.
I'm just saying. I don't like this thing.
Oh, you hate the Suns. It's a division rival. They took away the darling status from your Warriors.
Love the Suns.
Oh, no. I can see where this is going.
Oh, come on. No, I'm just saying. I don't like this thing where they have twins, and one of the twins is an inch taller than the other one. That's very confusing to me. I don't understand that.
Very untwin-like. All the twins in the NBA right now are very untwin-like.
They play differently.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that? You know, one of the Morris twins shoots threes and the other doesn't. And it's just – and then the Lopez twins, one of them is this kind of rangy Tyson Chandler-type defense guy, and the other guy is this low-post bruiser with touch. And how and why? Like, aren't you guys – completely identical? Or did what is this? How is this happening?
The hardest thing is my mom
is a twin. They do everything together and they're exactly alike. I expected this to happen at the NBA level.
I think the thing to worry about with the buffet of goodness is he's not all that healthy typically, right? So I think maybe that's not his play necessarily, but the health could close the buffet.
It could, but he's on the Suns.
Oh, that's true.
Everybody's kept healthy. In fact, there's a story, was it by Michael Schwartz, about the Phoenix Suns training staff that begins with him getting some sort of shot in his butt, him going through a shooting slump that was corrected because something was wrong with his butt.
Yeah.
That's... butt problems. You'll get that from a bad buffet. Not a buffet of goodness.
That's a buffet of sadness.
Yeah, a buffet of sadness is
buffet
how
buffet of goodness. There's just no way. There's no way that's his nickname. And now you know what this is going to do to me. I'm going
to
click. I have to click on every player
and find the nickname.
Yeah, to see what else is there. I think the Suns are here soon, or maybe they go to Phoenix.
You got to ask him.
When he comes, I'm absolutely going to ask him about this.
Definitely. I think that he might have a good answer to that because he's always been an interesting fellow. So, you know, I'm sorry for saying that, Channing Frye, buffet of goodness.
Yeah.
I believe in
don't,
you.
Don't call him Channing players. Frye. Respect him and call him by his nickname. Okay?
I apologize, buffet of goodness. You've been a reliable stretch five for years.
Yeah. Oh, no. They are here. They're here Wednesday. I have less than a week to talk to him about the buffet of goodness.
You gotta prep.
Oh my god, I've gotta research buffets.
An oral history is in order.
I actually hate buffets.
They're not usually not good. I like Indian buffets, but they're also usually not good. I just like them.
You feel cultured by going to them.
Well, it's great buffet fare because it's all mixed together.
That's a Bay Area hipster thing. You pretend you like Indian
come
food.
On. No, come on. It's just Indian food's good. What's wrong?
Good
what's
Indian better? Food's good. Not a buffet, though.
Well, the problem with the buffet Indian food is that the pakoras are always just rock hard and cold, those fried spinach thingies.
Yeah,
you can't
throw those in a chafing dish.
Yeah, you can't do that. But it's good because it kind of – if you're not going to have fresh food, the Indian food and how it's liquidy and gloppy and it doesn't need to be shimmery and shiny and presentable the way you'll often see in fast food commercials the food is presented, it works in its favor and it just makes sense, and you're just kind of you're eating it without really thinking, plus there's spiciness happening, so that can obscure whatever lack of freshness is occurring there. So
let me ask you something.
Yes.
The Warriors media dinner, do they charge you
$7?
Okay.
I never eat there.
Okay, the Wolves charge $8.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I come from a different place. I come from Sacramento where they didn't charge for the media dinner. And that was run by
where DeMarcus Cousins just cooks you the meal.
And that, DeMarcus Cousins, just you step up in line, he says, "What do you want, Chief?" No, the Maloofs didn't. Maybe they charge now, but when the Maloofs were running it, they didn't charge.
Yeah.
And I just think, all right, if the Maloofs can do it without charging, what are we doing here?
Well, they might have just been.
I'm not saying I need. I don't need a free meal, but
yeah.
It's just confusing that the Maloofs wouldn't charge, but other teams are.
Yeah, I'm debating on whether or not to tell a story of what I found in my food once, and that was the last time.
Okay.
But I don't. Suffice it to say, I do not eat. I do not eat from that. Maybe I'm just prissy. Other people gladly eat from that.
Well, it's no Indian buffet.
It's no Indian buffet. I would eat it if it's an Indian buffet, and they do that once a year on Bollywood night. I remember they once had a
Bollywood night.
There's a Bollywood night at Oracle, and they had shirts, free shirts that they gave away, and people wondered if it was politically incorrect because the shirt said "Got Curry," and it's now one of Allie's night shirts. And I don't think they've ever gone to it again. The Got Curry shirts.
Was that in the Cohen era, or is that?
I think it was early Lakab era.
Okay,
I believe
he's still throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what's cooked pasta.
It's one of those things too, where they go, "That's politically incorrect," but nobody can really put their finger on why.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It's like, well, you're saying Indian people eat curry. Well, it is sort of kind of the dish of India. it is a cultural, and not something to be ashamed of either. I mean, this has been exported around the world. This is the dish of England
still
now.
Really confused by your insistence that I love Halloween. I'm not against Halloween.
Didn't you talk about being in some sort of onesie?
I did that for I was, but that was more a comfort thing.
Okay.
That was like, I got the onesie to go to, a pajama party at Prince's music studio.
Oh God, this conversation is too Minnesota.
It's very Minnesota.
Talk about Purple Rain earlier.
Yeah, this has been the Prince episode. Yeah, no, I had the onesie purchased for me so I could have pajamas to go to the pajama party, and then it just became well, 2 weeks later it's Halloween. What are you going to be? I could just wear my onesie and be Superman.
These are terrible excuses.
I wouldn't say it's an excuse. It's just reality.
Oh, okay, it's not an excuse. It's an explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I can buy that. I can buy that. Yeah. I'm gonna break my
news. One Instagram photo, and you make up this whole set of like standards I have for holidays and what is important to me, what's not.
Hey, it's called extemporaneous talking, Zach. It's not perfect. You know, you're just gonna have to accept that. Just to add to my imperfection, I'm just gonna try to do a sloppy segue again. As I do, I'm gonna barrel in here.
I have no idea what we've talked about in this episode.
It's like, okay.
I've got to write a 2-paragraph recap for the post, and I'm just gonna write about holidays.
I just want to know because we talked about DeMarcus Cousins and charging. Did you see the charge he took against the Rockets, and is he finally getting it?
He led the league in charges 2 seasons ago.
I know, but he had this great defensive sequence at the end there where he was slapping the ball away from Dwight Howard. He ripped it from James Harden, and it was one of those moments where you thought, is this the light turning on? Is DeMarcus Cousins finally going to become a good defensive player, and is he stepping up?
It makes me happy that I never jumped off the
DeMarcus
bandwagon. I know you did. You saw your Andre Drummond, you saw your Anthony Davis, and you went elsewhere.
I did.
You didn't know you could have them all.
Yeah, and it just shows the sorts of psychological problems that I have, that I would get insulted and rejected by Drummond, and yet still keep coming back.
DeMarcus is having a season.
Yeah, he is.
22-11-3, almost 2 steals a game, over a block a game.
I was a hater and a doubter, and I was saying, is he really improving or is he just shooting more? And that's just making his PER rocket up there, but he's becoming a more efficient offensive player.
Yeah.
He's a legitimate beast down low right now, and if he just becomes a little bit better, and he has quick hands, he's always had quick hands, if he can use that to his advantage. I don't know.
You know who else is playing well? This Rudy Gay fella.
But nobody cares because the team he left is a more compelling narrative than whatever he's doing.
He's shooting 48%.
Nobody cares. La, 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 la. Toronto Raptors, we're the internet, and we hate Rudy Gay. That's how it goes.
That's okay. That's accurate.
It's very accurate. Maybe if he does it a little bit more, then people will go with the take that he's helped them. And my God, maybe it's not a trade where one team killed the other team. Maybe it's a trade where both teams benefited.
That's not allowed.
Yeah, it's not allowed. Somebody has to win.
Yeah.
Somebody has to win, damn it, in this exchange of players that's predicated on the notion that both teams can benefit. Somebody has to win and somebody has to lose in a devastating fashion. But
I feel really good about the Kings long term without having any idea what their plan is.
Yeah, I don't know what their plan is either. I just am sort of I have some resistance because Warriors fans, when they were angry at Mark Jackson and wanted to fire him, oh, I don't know, maybe like a week ago. built up Malone into this mastermind who'd been running everything, which I just didn't think was the case based on, I don't know, people I talked to. And nobody ever would come to you and say in confidence, you know, Malone's really running this thing, and the players never said that. So it was curious to me that the Warriors built him up to be this genius whose absence had marooned the team during that stretch when Iguodala was injured and they were playing Western Conference road games and losing. So that's why I wanted to kind of resist the Kings love, but for the first time there are glimmers of hope between IT2 and DeMarcus Cousins.
No, don't say like IT2. That's
stop hating.
It's such
stop
a
hating.
Stupid nickname.
Oh, it's great. It's great. He's wonderful. He's a starting point guard, Zach. You're gonna have to see, that's the thing. If I can admit that I was wrong about DeMarcus Cousins, you can possibly admit that you were wrong about Isaiah Thomas not being a starting point guard.
Here's the thing. I was ignoring you there because I just looked it up. Rudy Gay shooting 39% on mid-range jumpers.
That's not terrible.
No, that's quite acceptable.
It's acceptable, you know. Maybe.
Wait, is this? What is this hesitation?
What hesitation?
This hesitation in your acceptance of it. Like, that was a slow verbal acceptance.
Well, you need to go over 40 there. Then I would have just been right on board. I had to really think about whether or not 39 was good.
I actually thought he shot 36% last year, so maybe it's not. Maybe it's an improvement.
Yeah. What is this thing? You want the basketball Twitter intelligentsia to be wrong about something, so that is going to bias you towards Rudy Gay's improvement so you can laugh at them and feel superior.
I
have you pegged, and you're doing it in your onesie on your way to the your Halloween party because you love Halloween so much that you'll celebrate it on January 2nd.
I'm really excited to just tell it, like, all right, what tricks you got? What can you do, like a card trick? You know, backflip? Kid do a backflip, I'll give him a candy bar.
I love how you're just mocking these kids. Come on, kid.
Well,
like
maybe
Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
Maybe.
Saying racist things.
Yeah, does that mean I don't give candy to the Asian kids?
Wearing your culturally insensitive Got Curry shirt.
Yeah, God, that's a bad movie.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things, though, where nobody wanted to admit that Clint Eastwood was making a bad movie because he's so revered, and it's also kind of sad, and the acting in that movie, oh my God. It's so bad. Not him, but everybody else.
His acting's bad in that movie, too. He's not a good actor anymore.
Just because he's too old?
Yeah, I don't think you can get...
He's in a KG phase?
I don't think you can put enough effort into it. There's no way you have that mental attention anymore, that mental effort.
That acuity. I agree with you, but people don't want to admit it. And if you slap the right name across a movie, people will love it. It's why I haven't seen The Wolf of Wall Street, but I'll just assume it's not very good. Because I heard all this praise and love for The Departed, and then I watched that, and it wasn't any good. And I just thought, no.
That really, I loved it the first time I saw it. The more I watched it, the more I realized what an awful movie it is.
How convoluted.
Jack Nicholson is just... I mean, you can see him putting stamps on the envelope as he mails that performance in. If we were able to have a sponsor on this podcast, I would have said you can see him going to stamps.com and printing out his own postage. But we don't have sponsors.
Nobody ever sells the stamps.com advertiser well. Like, hey, who likes going to the post office?
Yeah. Hey, who doesn't pay their bills online?
At stamps.com. Da, 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 da. I love how with the podcast there are just only three advertisers that really go heavy, and you'll hear them on every podcast, and stamps.com is one of those. The other one is 23andMe about looking up your genetics. That's the other one.
Sure, that's a good one. And then Sherry's Berries.
There used to be Adam and Eve, which was for the more adult podcasts, I guess, but they really capitalized.
What adult podcasts are you listening to?
It's a whole subculture, man. You don't even want to know. You don't even want to know.
Basketball Twitter is furiously Googling this right now.
Oh, man. Weren't we going to talk League Pass announcers? Because I just love...
I
can't resist this. I can't resist the bad segues.
We're already at 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Okay, maybe we'll do it for another time.
Yeah, we can do that.
Maybe we'll do it for another time. Ooh, that's my Eric Reid imitation.
It's a clip. You know what? I was anti Heat broadcast for a long time.
You gotta say, you did it.
The last terrible nicknames aside, the last 2 years, I've loved their broadcasts.
It's very amusing. One guy sounds kind of like a Teamster or a low-level mobster. The other guy is just Radio Cheese. It's a great combination.
He does sound like Casey Kasem. But I don't know. I've been very impressed. I like the presence of Jason Jackson.
Oh, I love Jason Jackson. Love me some Jason Jackson.
Yeah. No, I think it's a quality broadcast now. And years ago, back when TalkHoops.net was a thing, there was a rating system for the broadcasters, and there was a series of posts that four people read in which we graded them all out, and the Heat did not score high back in 2007. Now they'd score quite high.
Oh yeah. I just love. I mean, the Wolves broadcast is probably my favorite, and that's not just me sucking up to you. It's just legitimately
it's a little good. It's a little bit you sucking up to me.
Well, maybe no. I love it, man. It's me sucking up to
Jim
Pete. Old Jim Pete over there.
Jim Pete and your boy, I don't know if you know he's your boy, but Dave Benz is a Bay Area guy.
If only they had that the radio broadcaster involved.
Oh, Alan Horton, my man.
That call on the love no call that, is just
that call is
wonderful.
That the Doe Ed Malloy is my
Doe Ed Malloy
is my text tone. I could play it right now if you wanted.
Please do. We could maybe have that. Maybe that could be our outro for this.
I'm sure this is going to be horrible, horrible quality, but here it is from my phone.
Go Ed Malloy! That was excellent quality.
There it is. My text tone.
That's beautiful. It's just so human. What I loved about that call is he wasn't that incensed until he saw the replay.
He saw that. Yeah, it was just like, oh, maybe he. It was kind of like this feeling of it wasn't a homer call. Because at first it was like, oh, he got stripped or whatever he says, and then he sees the replay, he's like, oh, brutal, and then he sees Ed Malloy, and everyone in Minnesota hates Ed Malloy now. He's like, oh, Ed Malloy.
I just loved when he yelled, "That's a foul," in the exact cadence of Sam Kinison in one of his comedy routines. That's a foul. It was so great.
Yeah, it was funny because he got a little bit of backlash, at least in my mentions on Twitter, of like, oh, what a homer call. And I was just like, no, it was just I can't believe Ed Malloy is such an idiot call. It was just contempt for Ed Malloy.
Why don't people like being entertained? Who cares? Who cares if it's homer or not? It was just so entertaining. We need more like that, more calls like that.
You're very into Austin Carr right now.
Oh, I love Austin Carr, man.
I like Austin Carr when he's giving the commentary for a losing team that has no chance.
Oh yeah,
because then
oh,
he's fun great. To me. But when they're a winning team, it rubs me the wrong way for some reason.
Well, speaking of rubbed in the wrong way, he just sounds when he's happy. He does the hoo hoo hoo. It sounds like Pillsbury Doughboy to me.
He sounds like he's being tickled.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
He does. He sounds like
the L Train from back in the day when LeBron was there.
It sounds like. Dan Gilbert is just behind him tickling as he's supposed to give commentary.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Love Austin Carr. Love Joel Myers with his sonorous voice.
Oh, Joel Myers is fantastic. That was
what a voice.
Huge mistake by the Lakers letting him go.
Oh, my God. What a voice.
Especially for the alternative. It's just, horrible mistake.
I would agree there. Oh, because that's such a great combo of you. If you get Lance combined with Myers there, that's
great. It was fantastic.
Oh man, that is absolutely fantastic. No reason to break that up. He's fantastic. It's a fairly cheap production over there for the Pelicans, but he elevates
it. They didn't even have a broadcast team here last night. I didn't see
one. That's the treat of League Pass, too, is that these halftime studio shows sometimes have no production value.
Yes.
And they look like they're from the 90s, yes, or they have some sort of weird set. The Suns halftime show, it's an all-black background like it's Charlie Rose. They just look like they're floating in outer space.
The Clippers is always Don McLean just sitting outside trying not to sweat.
I love the Lakers one, which is, it looks like a laser tag arena. I love it.
Yeah, it's just James Worthy trying not to fall asleep.
Or doing the Nick Young imitation that I love so much.
Yeah.
I want him to break that out some more.
Yeah.
But yeah, those right now would be my tops as far as what entertains me. It would be Wolves, and then Joel Myers, because obviously Anthony Davis, I'm watching a lot of that, so that needs to be factored in there, and some Austin Carr, and there are probably a bunch of other names that just escape me right now. A lot of them have that weird sort of upper register clownish old-timey radio voice that you would find on the Heat broadcast with there's so much on League Pass.
Yeah, I think it's just an old school broadcast thing that you kind of had, like, if you didn't have that low gravelly voice that kind of smoothed out as they kept talking throughout the broadcast. I think that
you'd be wound up.
Yeah, you had to be wound up. I think that's just like that's what they were taught.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
George
gets the ball.
I'm sure you're a huge fan. George Blaha with the Detroit Pistons is one of my favorite play-by-play guys.
Oh yeah. They're good. Oh dude, the Pacers broadcast.
Pacers broadcast is excellent. Mavericks broadcast is excellent.
And the worst ones are the Blazers and the Clippers.
I like Ralph Lawler, but Mike Smith just... Mike Smith is so...
You like a little me oh my? Are you into?
I do like a little oh me oh my. Like, he's like... I don't know. It's like your grandpa trying to call a game. Like, he's just very old school. He's holding a microphone like he's a game show host.
It's, you know what? Yeah, I'm hating a little too much.
The problem is that Mike Smith is always surprised by athleticism. Is that he...
How did he do that?
Right, like, he propelled himself into the air!
And then if Eric Reed was on the broadcast, that's the fifth time he's propelled himself in the air in the last seven games. I'm stealing Greg Cody's bit. Greg Cody will imitate the columnist for the Miami Herald. He'll imitate all the stupid, goofy stats that Reed throws in there.
It's somehow he worked out over the last 15 years of his life, and he built up a muscle mass and these these fast twitch muscle reactions propelled him as he catapulted into the air. I don't understand how he did it.
Is he man or hovercraft? Nobody can know.
Look at him. He's palming a basketball. He has his hand wrapped around a basketball, and he's swinging it violently in the air towards a cylinder.
Sounds like some sort of the information you would get on a cave painting.
I mean, the job is to explain basketball, and he is literally explaining the art, like the concept of basketball. So I guess he's doing his job.
It's just on such a granular level that isn't too necessary.
I'm probably gonna get in so much trouble for this conversation.
Why? Why? What happened?
I guess we're technically criticizing media members. You're not really supposed to do that.
We love all of you guys.
It's not as bad as that ESPN. You can't do it at all. No one listens to this podcast anyway. It'll be fine.
I gotta go.
Well, we can follow you at Sherwood Strauss on Twitter. The people have been clamoring for you to get back on the podcast. I feel like this was enough to either completely satiate them or want them for us to never talk again. So I feel like we've done our job.
Probably the latter, but yeah. You know, we'll at least talk in person sometime because we've upped the quotient to 2 a year now.
Yeah.
So
look at what you're doing. You are speaking into a microphone that is amplifying your voice, and then you're transmitting it over the internet.
I'm also
tubes.
Flying through the air.
Flying through the air, and I'm hearing it in my headphones.
Oh me, oh my.
Thanks, Ethan.
Thanks, Zach.